Nighttime. Above a sprawling city, words appear. Los Angeles. A title. Code 1114. Starring David James Elliott as Kurt Novak. Terry Farrell as Michelle Novak. Stephen Lang, Nancy Chambers, Miles Jeffrey. Now, on a residential street, the headlights of a red SUV blink on and off. Our view moves across the lawn to a large window. Inside the house, a blonde woman falls backward against the blinds. She runs frantically through a hallway, fumbles with a chain locked door, then gapes at a person's shadow hovering over her. As parakeets flap their wings against their cage, the woman falls into the bedroom. She topples over a floor lamp, then hurries past a dresser, knocking off picture frames. Diving onto the bed, the blonde picks up a phone from a nightstand and dials. On the floor, a black shoe steps on a framed photo of the woman. As she holds the phone to her ear, a gloved hand yanks it away from her and returns it to its base. Wide-eyed, the blonde backs up against the headboard and shields her face. A bright light flashes, illuminating her face. The gloved hand presses a car alarm remote. The blonde lies with her eyes closed. The gloved person snaps a photo. More credits. Produced by Joel S. Rice. Executive producer John Lafia. Teleplay by James Kearns. Story by John Lafia and James Kearns. Morning. Police and reporters swarm the scene. A tall man and a golden-haired woman pass through the crowd.
Nice job, huh? Right off the plane, and we have a fresh homicide for you.
How do we know this is our guy?
We don't. The neighborhood's about right, though. Her age is consistent with the other victims.
Shouldn't the police notify you if it matches the M.O.?
Yeah, well, they should. They never do.
Directed by Jean de Saganzac. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Nikki Zada, Dutch Priest, Stacey Perlman, and Justin Soule. Read by Pat Lentz. Inside the house, among a handful of detectives, the couple meets a brown-haired man.
What the hell are you doing here, Novak?
Looking around.
He glances at the woman.
Special Agent Bowman, Detective McElroy.
Detective?
She's with the Behavior Profile Unit, just in from Quantico. You know the Bureau has jurisdiction over serial murders.
Only nobody said this is a serial killer.
Well, that's what I'm here to find out. Where's the body?
In the bedroom.
No sign of a struggle. None.
There was one. He straightens up. What do you got on her?
Her name's Jessica Larson. She owned a restaurant in the marina. Larson Station.
I know it. $8 for a glass of wine.
The agents put on latex gloves, then Novak reveals Jessica's bound hands.
All right, McElroy, let's not play dumb. Where's the photo?
McElroy reaches into his coat pocket, pulls out a bagged Polaroid, and hands it to Novak. The FBI agents gaze at the image of Jessica staring wide-eyed at the camera.
Earrings are missing. Another addition to his souvenir collection.
This is the seventh homicide with the same M.O. Upscale young women, murdered in their beds, no sign of a struggle. There's always jewelry missing, and there's always two photos.
Two.
One in the victim's hands, another hidden someplace else with a piece cut out.
This is a serial murder, detective. The Bureau has jurisdiction.
Okay. We're out of here.
FBI agents enter.
Dust for Prince. You're not gonna find any. He never leaves Prince.
She was still alive when he took this picture.
Novak?
An agent hands Novak a photo. Jessica's right leg has been cut out of it.
This guy's one cruel, sick son of a bitch.
Outside, Novak and Bowman pass the reporters.
You gotta have some leads. Give us something.
Come on, Kurt. You can't keep stonewalling us on this.
Look, if there was anything I could tell you, I would.
Another dead body. Another no comment from FBI agent Kurt Novak.
No wonder they think we're stonewalling them. This many homicides and we still have nothing.
I'm working up a profile. We've got enough to at least get started.
Yeah, we're getting started. He's way ahead of us.
Hey, Novak. I got a call for you. I got a call for you, seriously.
The reporter nods.
Keep it short, please.
Kurt takes the phone.
Novak here.
Novak, you never say anything to those nice people. Don't you think you ought to release the pictures?
It's him. Maybe he's around here somewhere.
Bowman runs off.
I'm considering it. There are pros and cons, though.
It's evidence, Novak. Don't you think the public should have it?
Bowman talks with the reporter, then into her phone.
Hey, give me a trace on 555-0144.
And you don't believe in sharing? That's not very nice, Novak.
Yeah, well, I like to keep some things to myself, you know? You're a smart guy. I'm sure you understand that.
Just release the damn pictures, Novak. I'm not kidding.
Look at...
Kurt frowns.
It's gone.
Did you get it?
Bowman hangs up.
Nothing.
He surprised us this time. Let's be ready for him next time.
Nearby, in a parked car, a pair of pearl earrings dangle from a rearview mirror. A gloved hand touches them. Now at the FBI, photos of blonde women cover a wall. Bowman and Kurt stand with a group of agents.
All right, let's go over the details of the case one more time. He leaves us two snapshots of each victim. He cuts one of them up.
But he doesn't dismember the victims.
Exactly. In fact, he lays them out very neatly. I mean, he wants it to look like they're not hurt at all.
What does that tell us?
I think he's collecting the pieces. A leg missing from this picture, an arm from another, part of the face, the hip. We've got the body. We don't need the pictures. So why does he leave them? He wants us to know he's taking pictures.
Why?
It's a family album.
When he's leaving them for us because we're part of the family?
Well, actually, that's very possible. Let's consider something else. I mean, look at the way he straightens up. Look at the way he takes care of the body, brushes the hair, makes everything neat. I'd say that makes him a caregiver, probably from a small family, possibly an only child.
So we get a neat, tidy guy who may or may not be an only child. How does that help us? Look, let's talk about evidence. What have we got?
He trims the ends off the pictures. No serial numbers, so that's no good.
He meets the victims outside their businesses so no one can see them leaving together. No one can ID him.
Guys, you're telling me what we don't have. What do we have?
We have the fact that he picks up successful, career-oriented women. I assume this means he's very presentable, well-spoken, educated.
Very good.
Kurt faces the group.
All right. So what else?
He scans the room.
Come on, people, we've got five homicides in the L.A. area, one in Denver, one in San Francisco.
Travis. Maybe a salesman.
And we know this is his home base because there's multiple killings here.
Good. Good. Andrea, keep working on that profile. Maybe you'll come up with something a little more concrete. In the meantime, let's run the Denver and the San Francisco dates. Maybe they have something in common, a trade show, a big tennis tournament. I don't know, anything.
All right.
The first murders were months apart, then weeks. Okay. And one before this one, just 10 days. He's raised the stakes. He's gaining on us. Let's get a move on, huh?
Kurt stares sternly at the photos on the wall. The deceased women lie in beds with their hair neatly brushed out on pillows. Their hands are bound at their chests, and a Polaroid of them staring wide-eyed at the camera sticks out from between their fingers. Now, in a bedroom, an adolescent boy sleeps. In the hallway, a shadow appears. It moves closer, then Kurt enters. He gazes at the boy and smiles. Later, he enters another bedroom, where a slim brunette woman brushes her hair.
Is he sleeping?
Oh, yeah. Total log.
They said on the news tonight that there was another murder.
Hmm. You know, when he's asleep, he looks just like you. He has your mouth.
She smiles.
Does not. The image of your father.
Kurt unbuttons his shirt.
Is it the same killer?
He moves close to her.
Turn around. I want to check out your mouth.
Their lips meet. As they kiss, she wraps her arms around his neck and he holds her waist. They fall onto their bed. Lying on top of his wife, Kurt kisses her neck as he removes his shirt.
Kurt, why wouldn't you answer a simple question?
What's the question?
Is the killer the same guy?
We're in bed and you want to talk about killings?
Kurt, when do you want to talk about it?
I don't want to talk about it.
Well, then it's a good thing I saw you coming out of the building on the 11 o'clock news, because otherwise I wouldn't know what my husband's doing, now would I?
He puts his shirt back on.
I'm not asking for deep, dark FBI secrets.
Kurt sits on the edge of the bed with his back to Michelle.
I just feel so out of the loop.
It's not a loop you want to be in, trust me.
He stares off somberly.
Kurt, you are distracted all the time. Distant, you know, you used to talk to me.
I never used to work serial killings, Michelle. You know, we never had a son then.
What does Johnny have to do with this? I didn't say I wanted to talk about this in front of Johnny.
You know what, we're not two kids living in an apartment anymore. This is ugly stuff, okay? It's not the kind of thing you bring into your house. Another bad dream.
You want me to?
No, I'm...
Kurt gets up.
This is exactly why I try to keep this out of the house.
He goes into his son's bedroom where Johnny wakes up.
Hey. It's okay, partner.
Hi, Daddy.
Hey.
There wasn't anyone here, was there?
No.
Are you sure?
Am I sure? Your dad's an FBI agent.
The boy smiles, then wrinkles his brow.
I'm sorry.
Nothing to be sorry about, it's important.
If you didn't get scared, then you wouldn't have to wake up and come in here.
I wasn't asleep, and I was coming in here anyway, partner, because I wanted to see my best buddy. So move over, let me lie down with you, all right? You gotta get some sleep, man. You got school in the morning.
School.
Yeah, well, everybody's gotta go to school. All right, So close your eyes, all right? Dad's right here.
Kurt lies next to his son.
Get some sleep.
As the boy falls asleep, Kurt shuts his own eyes. His head sinks into the pillow and his eyelids flutter. Now a blonde woman lies with her eyes wide open as a bright light passes over her face. Two gloved hands roll up her sleeve and straighten her arm. A white light flashes. Gloved hands bind the woman's wrists at her chest, then brush her hair out against a pillow. She wears a necklace with a green gemstone. The hands rip it from her neck. Holding a Polaroid of the screaming woman, the gloved hand places it between her knuckles, then carefully pull a bedspread up to her neck. The killer uses an X-Acto knife on the photo, cutting out the shape of her arm, then hangs the picture on a flower stem in a vase. In the tiny bedroom, the pale woman lies motionless. Her long hair fans out across the pillow. Morning. In Johnny's bedroom, the FBI agent sleeps beside his son.
Honey.
Michelle touches Kurt's shoulder. He jolts upright and grabs her arm.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to sleep in here, sorry.
He groggily gets up as Michelle checks on their son. With half-opened eyes, Kurt heads for the door, then looks back at the boy. Michelle rubs her husband's arm and they walk out together. In the bed, the auburn-haired boy rolls over. Now in the backyard, Johnny sits in a soapbox car.
Dad?
Mm-hmm?
Why do I have all these nightmares?
Kurt affixes a red stripe on the car's blue frame.
Well, buddy, everybody has nightmares. I mean, you worry about stuff during the day and it pops up in your head at night when you're sleeping. You're worried about your dad's job, aren't you?
Yeah.
Johnny, your dad's part of a team. We go after the criminals together and we catch them and we put them in jail. There's nothing for you to be scared of. I'm always going to be there to protect you and your mom, okay?
Okay.
Tell you, if you want to be scared of something, I'd be worried about how I'm going to handle this hot rod once I get this wheel on.
Johnny smiles.
So let's take it for a spin, huh?
Cool.
Michelle gazes at them through the kitchen window. She smiles, then her face grows serious. Now Johnny rides the soapbox car down a residential street. Kurt runs alongside the car. As they reach the bottom, Kurt slows the car.
Whoa, that was so fun.
Maybe I should build one of my size.
Dad, come on, let's do it again.
We should go home, buddy.
No, one more time. Come on, one more.
All right, one more time.
Yeah. Kurt pushes the car up the street.
Hey, I'm going uphill.
Later, Johnny runs into the Novak kitchen.
Mom, I camped on Cherry Street Hill. It was so cool.
I knew it would be. Now go get yourself washed up.
Bowman stands in the kitchen with Michelle. Kurt enters the room and stares.
Something came up.
Kurt looks at his son.
While you're at it, take a bath.
The three adults watch Johnny leave the room. Andrea faces Kurt as Johnny spies.
Another homicide.
Bath! Now!
Come on, I'll help you get started.
As Michelle walks to Johnny, she glances over her shoulder and glares at her husband. The two FBI agents face each other.
Where?
Sydney, Australia.
Sydney, Australia?
Same MO. The victim ran a small theater. He left behind two snapshots, the whole thing. It's our guy.
Kurt suspiciously eyes her.
Well, stay in touch with him. Get all the reports, huh?
You're going.
Look, Andrea, I got too much of my plate here as it is. And besides, they're not going to let me investigate their case.
They have a suspect in custody.
Later, Michelle packs a suitcase. Kurt talks on the phone.
I am not going into detail. You don't need a family history. Just know that's the only way I'm going to do this. So you decide. Not that sweater. It makes me look like I weigh 300 pounds. So, what do you say? I owe you one. Thank you.
I wish you didn't have to go. You're going to miss Johnny's spring break. And he's really enjoying his time with you.
I wish I could spend more time with you, too.
He grabs another suitcase.
What do you say? We all go on the bureau.
Are you serious?
Yes.
She kisses Kurt's cheek and they hug. Now, deep blue water laps at the base of a ragged cliff. A dense forest covers the landmass. Words appear. Sydney, Australia. Beyond another stretch of water, a city looms in the distance. The Sydney Opera House extends from the shore. The image fades away as a closer view of the downtown area appears. A large airliner touches down on a runway. Now outside, Michelle smiles as Johnny pets a koala. Later, she looks on as the young boy pets a baby kangaroo. Now as they ride in a SkyTram, Johnny points to the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Later, in a boat, they ride in the harbour. Michelle snaps a photo of the Opera House. A blue sky silhouettes the roof's white segmented arches. Now at the Opera House, they pose for a picture. Elsewhere, a convoy of police vehicles pull up to a building. A cameraman aims his camera at one car as it drives past him. In the back seat, a strawberry blonde-haired man bows his head. A group of reporters chase after the cars. Now, inside the building, an investigator faces the strawberry blonde man. Kurt sits nearby.
I don't want to hear that, Roger. You're insulting my intelligence.
He holds out the green gem necklace.
This was found in the dresser in your hotel.
I've never seen that in my life.
Well, maybe this picture. I'll help you remember.
Name is Leslie Blaine.
Roger fingers a Polaroid.
I don't even know her.
Yeah, well, you're not doing very well in explaining things today, are you, Roger? Maybe you can explain this.
He tosses down a bagged matchbox.
I don't know. I don't smoke.
Larson Station. That's a restaurant in Los Angeles, isn't that right, Mr. Novak?
In the Venice area. I've never been there.
We've had 7 homicides back in the U.S. A lot of similarities to this one here, Mr. Fortson.
Well, I don't know anything about that. Nothing.
Put yourself in my place, Roger. We got a phone call saying you were seen picking up Leslie Blaine at her place of business.
Who would say that? I've never been there. I have a wife and a child. I only go out with my family.
Well, you might be making a good point there, Roger. We don't usually put much stock in anonymous phone calls, but how does that explain the photo of the dead girl being found in your hotel room, and how does it explain the necklace?
And the matches.
Back in Los Angeles, Andrea watches on a monitor.
I never saw these things in my room, and I don't know how they got there.
The investigator leans down to Roger.
I can do you a favor, mate. Make it a lot easier. We do not have capital punishment here in Australia, okay? So, wouldn't it be a good idea if you talked to me?
On the monitor, Roger wipes tears from his eyes.
Right, this is a man who does not want to help himself. I think we should just leave him alone and let him work it out.
The investigator collects his papers.
Interview terminated, 12:15.
He turns off a tape recorder, then knocks on the door. A guard opens it. As Kurt follows the investigator out, he watches Roger weep. Back in Los Angeles, the satellite feed shows the suspect resting his head on the table. Andrea presses a remote and the monitor turns off.
Show's over.
Back in Australia.
I'm not so sure this is our man.
Of course it's our man. He's petrified because he knows we're onto him.
Kurt answers his cell phone.
Novak.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I know. It looks good. I'm not sold, though. This guy's falling apart.
Yeah, because he's falling apart. The game is over.
We're dealing with a deeply divided personality, Kurt.
Well, I don't care how many personalities he's got. He wouldn't whimper like that.
There is a ton of evidence.
This is not the guy who called me on the phone, Andrea.
But you said he disguised his voice.
All right, look, we'll play it out, okay? We've got 7 homicides. They've got 1. If Roger Fortson is alibi for any of them.
We're already on it.
All right.
He hangs up.
You sound like you want to be this guy's lawyer. Well, as far as I'm concerned, we made our case.
As they exit the building, reporters rush over.
Vivian.
Have you made an arrest?
You have a suspect, right?
Is he an American?
We have a suspect. We are proceeding with prosecution. And yes, he is American.
Well, how long have you been here?
Now, Michelle and Johnny happily cross a bridge. Later, Johnny slides down a ramped wall outside the Sydney Opera House. He charges back up the wall. Our view peeks around a corner as he slides down again. Michelle snaps a picture of her son. As they charge down a staircase, a pigeon flies out of their way. Our view peers down at them through the railing posts of a balcony overhead. Later.
Even the birds are weird here. How come everything's so strange?
Well, Australia's separated from everywhere else, so things just evolve differently.
They approach a newsstand.
Oh, looks like Daddy had a good day. Didn't he tell you they'd lock him up?
As Michelle buys a paper, Johnny stares at a black and white photo of Roger. A headline reads, "Arrest made in Paddington."
Oh, sweetie.
Michelle puts her arm around her son and leads him off. Now, a patio door slides open. A hand pulls back some curtains, and our view glides into a hotel suite. Light streams from the ceiling onto a three-sided desk unit along one corner. In the next room, an open suitcase sits on a stand at the foot of a bed. It contains wrinkled clothes on top of others neatly folded.
Let me have the key.
The view sweeps to the door, then ducks behind a slatted closet door. Michelle and Johnny enter.
I recommend a nap before dinner. Your father should be home by then.
I'm not tired.
Then humor me.
Can I watch TV?
No.
Please.
Oh, all right.
Johnny presses a remote.
He's in the row. He's having a storm on his...
Can we get a pizza?
Let's see when Dad gets back, okay?
The intruder peers between the slats as Michelle enters the bedroom and removes her shoes. She enters the bathroom. In the living room, Johnny lies back as he watches a rugby game. In the bathroom, Michelle twists a faucet nozzle. The door appears slightly open through the closet's slats. Back in the living room, Johnny rubs his eyes. Now the intruder's fingers slide open the closet door. In the bathtub, Michelle runs a body sponge along her bare arm. Now the intruder's view peers around a corner at Johnny, who sleeps on the couch. The intruder approaches the open bathroom door. A few feet away, Michelle bays with her back to the door. Gloved hands hold up an instant camera. The intruder ducks away as Michelle glances over her shoulder. She shakes her head dismissively and continues gently scrubbing her body. Now, the intruder's view floats toward Johnny as he sleeps on the couch. Back in the bathroom, Michelle pushes her hair back over the rim of the tub and lets her head sink down to the water. In the living room, the intruder's view hovers inches above Johnny. Now, Michelle fans her hair out into the bathwater. She sits up. Johnny flails on the couch, alone. Michelle runs out in a robe.
It's all right, I'm here. I'm right here. It's all right. Okay? It's okay.
The front door opens. Kurt enters.
Oh.
Hey.
He approaches his family.
What's up? Another bad dream?
Wasn't a dream. I saw him. I saw somebody in the room.
Who'd you see, buddy?
What'd he look like?
I don't know.
That's because there was nobody here, partner. It was just another bad dream, huh?
Hey, I got something might cheer you up.
He reaches into a paper bag and pulls out a boomerang.
Hey?
Wow. Wait till all the kids at school see this.
He reads a label.
Use with caution.
Please, do that. Especially in here.
This is for you.
He hands Michelle a box. She opens it and withdraws a colorful silk scarf.
Oh, Kurt, it's beautiful.
She gives him a kiss.
Thank you.
Looking at her reflection in the glass patio door, she drapes the scarf around her neck. Outside.
Thanks, Dad.
The intruder's view peeks from behind a tree as the family hugs on the other side of the glass. Now, in an airport terminal, a shapely blonde woman wheels her luggage past a check-in counter.
What do you mean you can't find the tickets? They're right here.
In the computer, sir.
You're not going to find them in the computer because they're in my hand.
Someone seems to have canceled your reservation.
It can't be canceled. I have them right here.
I'm doing the best I can, sir. Your flight is booked out.
Yes, my wife and son and I are part of who it's booked out to.
Ah, here it is. You were reticketed to Oceanic, flight 816.
Look, I haven't been reticketed. I have the tickets in my hand. This is ridiculous.
You were reticketed and upgraded to first class.
You know what? I'm an agent of the U.S.
Kurt blinks and his wife stifles a grin.
First class. It's not going to cost extra, is it?
No, sir.
The clerk hands him his tickets.
Thank you.
Now, an airline worker drives a luggage cart around a jumbo jet. Inside, passengers find their seats.
Have a nice flight. Welcome, sir. May I help you there?
Yeah, I'm down here.
This aisle, second row on the left.
Okay. Maybe the bureau upgraded is because you caught the guy.
Maybe.
The Novaks enter.
Welcome, sir. First class. This way, sir. Enjoy your flight.
The family enters the first class section.
Welcome, may I help you?
Okay, that's the second row, the window seat, the aisle, and the one office. May I take your coat and your scarf for you, ma'am? Your jacket, sir?
No. Thanks.
Look at this.
Johnny digs through a goodie bag.
Should we not pay an extra for this?
Hi, I'm Justin. You must be Johnny.
How do you know my son's name?
It's right here on the manifest, Mr. and Mrs. Novak and son John.
Well, that's cool.
Can I get you folks a drink?
Soda? Anything without caffeine.
Long flight, wise choice. You?
White wine, please.
Sir?
Scotch and soda.
Be right back with the drinks.
Kurt, Michelle, and Johnny take their seats.
And I'm supposed to be the suspicious one.
Oh, yeah, right. Case closed. Now we can all relax.
Kurt and Michelle recline in their seats. In coach, the shapely blonde woman wheels her suitcase down an aisle. A man with a dimpled chin watches her lift it to an overhead bin. He springs from his seat and helps her.
Here, let me get that.
It's all right.
Oh, really?
I've got it.
The man smiles.
I was just trying to be helpful.
Excuse me.
She squeezes down a row to a window seat. The dimpled chin man returns to his own seat and angrily fastens his seatbelt. A gold chain hangs beneath the open collar of his shiny red shirt.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is your Captain Bruce Copeland. At this time, I'd like to welcome you aboard Oceanic Flight 816 from Sydney to Los Angeles International Airport. Now, sit back, get comfortable. We're waiting for one more passenger.
In the cockpit.
As soon as everyone's on board, we'll be pushing back from the gate. Shouldn't be more than a few minutes. In the meantime, our flight attendants are standing by to help you.
Justin enters.
They paged the terminal?
Several times. Nothing so far.
And this is someone who was on the flight from Melbourne?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We'll give him two more minutes and then we'll yank his baggage. Not going to cost us an untimed departure over some clown who's probably passed out in the terminal lounge.
Way to go, Bruce.
As Justin leaves, Captain Copeland puts on a headset. Outside, the loading ramp retracts from the jet. A luggage tram passes in front of the plane as it taxis. A hazy stream of exhaust emanates from an engine, and a logo across the fuselage reads, Oceanic. In first class, Johnny plays with a toy car while his father sips his drink.
You know, they put a little scotch in the scotch and soda in first class.
Flight attendants, prepare for departure.
Oh, I wonder if he made it.
Who?
That guy we were waiting for.
Oh, we assume it's a guy?
Oh, just because someone is late doesn't mean it's necessarily a woman, Kurt.
I bet it's a guy, Daddy. You're always late for everything.
When is the last time I
Every one of my soccer games.
When was
games?
The last time we ever saw the beginning of a movie?
Wow, you two really know how to hurt a guy.
I'm gonna have to take the glasses away for takeoff, but I promise a refill as soon as we're in the air. Thank you. Seatbelt, good man.
I'll freshen that as soon as we're up, okay, sir? Thank you.
seat back up.
The jet lifts off. Its white body matches the fluffy clouds in the pale blue sky. Now, an aerial view pulls away from the Sydney Opera House toward the sea, and the red-tailed oceanic jet soars away. Inside first class, a man pours himself a drink. Michelle exits a lavatory. She smells her hands, then rubs them together. As she returns to her seat, she waves at her husband, who stands down the aisle at the attendant station. He waves back and she takes her seat. Johnny lies asleep with his head propped on a pillow against the window. As Michelle pulls a paperback from the seat flap in front of her, she spots a purple ribbon. Her brow furrows as she takes out a wrapped package. A card tucked inside the ribbon reads, "For the woman of my dreams." Michelle glances over her shoulder, smiling, then eagerly unwraps the gift. At the attendant station, Kurt chats with a brunette stewardess.
How about I get back?
Well, if there's anything else, just press your call button.
Oh, thanks, but the walk will do me good. It's not stretch the legs on a long flight. Thank you.
Okay.
As Kurt returns to his seat, he eyes his son.
Wow, he's passed out, huh?
You are so sweet. I love them. The scarf and this. You're spoiling me.
What are you talking about?
Michelle displays her new dangling pearl earrings.
Where did you get those?
What do you mean, where did I get them?
Where did you get them?
Where you put them. In the seat pocket. Kurt, what's wrong?
Michelle, they came off the last victim in Los Angeles.
Oh, my God.
She removes them. Kurt answers a phone inside the seat's panel.
Hello?
Kurt scans the first class passengers.
Yeah, well, why don't you send me your address and I'll have her drop you a thank you note, huh?
That's very cute, Novak. You know, you should have released the photos like I asked you to. Get the public involved. Maybe somebody saw me leave one of the apartments. Maybe some concerned citizen would have turned me in. Maybe you could have saved some lives.
Look.
As Kurt kneels by his wife's side, our view recedes through their window. The oceanic jet veers away, soaring over a thin accumulation of clouds.
Michelle, you gotta get a hold of yourself. Let's not jump to conclusions, okay? I want you to come with me.
Kurt leads his wife down the aisle, leaving their sleeping son in his seat. At the attendant station.
Okay, look, we gotta think this through, okay? We don't know for sure that this guy is on the plane. He could have put the earrings there while we were still on the ground.
How would he know where we are?
The seating plan, remember?
I guess.
Look, Michelle, if he were on the same plane as me, he's not gonna let me know that, is he?
I don't understand. If you arrested him...
The Sydney police were gung-ho to close the case.
And you weren't?
I had my doubts.
Oh, that's not like you, Kurt. How could you just let them...
I don't have jurisdiction in Australia. I told the office to keep working on it. It's the only thing I could do.
I wish you would have told me that.
Well, I didn't know it would involve us. The truth is, Michelle, the guy has called me one time before this.
What?
I didn't tell you. I didn't want you to be alarmed.
When did this happen?
Look, he's zeroing in on me because I'm leading the investigation. It happens.
Kurt, Johnny said he saw someone in the hotel room. You don't think that...
No. I don't think it. Okay.
Michelle closes her eyes and lowers her head. Back in first class, Johnny wakes up and rubs his eyes. Noticing his parents' empty seats, he knits his brow. He looks around and sees them at the attendant station. As Johnny kneels on his seat, his parents spot him. Kurt watches his wife return to first class. Wearing a pleasant smile, she sits beside Johnny.
Did you have a nice nap?
Yeah. Can I get a soda?
Sure. Sure, honey.
At the attendance station, Kurt heads to the upper deck. There, a couple of passengers converse over drinks.
Oh, yeah?
Excuse me.
He heads across the lounge, passing blue cushioned seats and some small tables to a closed door.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Novak. No one is allowed to go into the flight deck.
He shows his ID.
I'm with the FBI. I need to speak with the captain.
The attendant knocks on the door.
Captain, this gentleman needs to talk with you.
Yes?
Special Agent Kurt Novak, Federal Bureau of Investigation.
And?
As Kurt hesitates, the mustached captain nods to the brunette and Justin. They leave. A slender co-pilot and short-haired flight engineer watch intently.
Captain, the passenger we were waiting for before takeoff, did he get on the aircraft?
No. Why?
Was he ticketed from Melbourne or was he a new arrival?
I'm answering your questions. You're not answering mine. Now, on this aircraft, I'm the captain, so I suggest you put your cards on the table.
On the upper deck, Justin and the brunette clean the lounge.
What do you think's the matter?
Why does anything have to be the matter?
Well, he's with the FBI. I'll bet he's the one who came over because of that serial killer they caught.
You're kidding.
No, it said in the paper some FBI agent came over.
Really?
The brunette looks back at the door, now inside the cockpit.
There are only two possibilities, Captain. The earrings were put there by somebody who's still on the aircraft or by somebody who got off before we departed.
You're assuming it's someone who got off?
Look, I'm not assuming anything, but I have to consider every angle. If it's someone who's still on the aircraft, he's going to be with us the next 14 hours. But if he got off...
Right. He could be anywhere.
Which is why I need you to tell me everything you know about a passenger who buys a ticket to L.A. and gets off 12,000 miles short.
In coach, the shapely blonde gets up, straightens her tank top, and makes her way to the aisle. As she passes the dimple-chinned man, he cranes his head around, watching her walk away. He smiles, faces forward, and closes his eyes. In the rear of the plane, the blonde steps in line behind an older, red-headed woman.
Isn't this unbearable?
What?
Economy. My manager made the reservation. I don't know what happened.
Must be awful.
The redhead smirks. Now the engineer hands a printout to Copeland.
Right, this is what we got. Passenger's name is a Mr. Terry Williamson, American. Boarded Melbourne, booked to L.A.
But he's not on board.
Well, we had 125 passengers from Melbourne. About half of them have booked through. But the layover in Sydney is usually around 2 hours. Most of them get off, get back on again. This guy didn't get back on. Now, do you mind telling me what you want this guy for?
Murder.
The co-pilot's eyes widen.
He killed someone?
8 people, actually.
Glad he missed a flight.
The agent looks over the printout.
I'm going to need to speak to some of your flight attendants. If they remember this Williamson, maybe I can get a description.
No problem. But if you're following this guy, how is it you don't know what he looks like?
Actually, I think he's following me.
Now, the shapely blonde waits outside the lavatory. As the redhead exits, the blonde holds the door open and lifts her brow. She enters and closes the door. With a turn of the lock, the outside panel switches from vacant to occupied. Now, Johnny turns away from his window.
Hey, where'd Daddy go?
Oh, he'll be back in a minute. He went to go talk to the captain.
What are they talking about?
I think that Daddy wants to learn how to fly the airplane.
Yeah, right.
In the cockpit, Kurt holds the pearl earrings as he speaks into a headset.
Oh, they're the same earrings, all right. No question about it.
He just called me.
He called you on the plane? Then he's got to be on board.
Look, Cap, could he make that call from the ground?
Sure, if he knew the number.
Which he could have got off the phone when he was aboard. Did you get that?
Affirmative.
What do you need me to do?
Look, there was a passenger from Melbourne who got off the plane during a layover in Sydney.
He never got back on. Name's Williamson.
Harry.
We're transmitting the manifest to
you right now. Check him out.
I'll get right on it.
Get back to me the moment you know anything.
Kurt, wait a minute.
What?
You were right about that guy they had locked up in Australia. He had back surgery.
He was in the hospital for the first 2 homicides.
How is it that I knew that? Over and out.
Now in coach, the dimple-chinned man walks down the aisle. He meets an attractive attendant pushing a drink cart.
Excuse me. Excuse me?
He throws his hands up and steps aside. As she passes with the cart, he glances back. Wearing a large grin, the passenger makes his way to his seat. In the rear of the plane, the attendant slides her cart to the side and walks over to a closed blue curtain. She draws it slightly open and looks at the floor. Now in first class, Kurt walks back to Michelle and Johnny.
Johnny, Mommy and Daddy need to speak alone for a minute, okay?
How come no one ever tells me anything?
Come on, buddy, you and I have secrets, right?
Right.
Well, Mommy and Daddy have secrets, too. Now put your seatbelt on. We'll be back in a minute, okay, sport?
Kurt walks Michelle away.
Apparently there was a Melbourne passenger who didn't get back on. All right, come here. He didn't get back on. He could have put the earrings there and got the phone number at the same time. Andrea's checking it out.
The attractive attendant runs past
right.
them.
Just look. We need a doctor.
About just bringing ourselves.
There's a woman in the tail section. I'm not sure what's wrong with her.
I'll check the manifest. I'm sure that there's a doctor on board. I'm going to tell the captain.
Kurt knits his brow.
I can stay with you. Can you do that? Just slow down. But I don't want to create any panic, all right? Okay, let's go.
Miss, I'm with the FBI. Is something the matter?
It's nothing. It's just... You'd better come with me.
All right, okay, just hang on. Sweetheart, go sit with Johnny, all right? I'll be right back, okay?
As Michelle heads back to her seat, Kurt follows the attendant through coach. As they pass, the dimple-chinned man looks up from his magazine and peers over his shoulder. Kurt and the woman approach a short male attendant.
What's the problem?
There's a woman back...
I need you to stand guard. Don't let anybody back here.
The wavy-haired male attendant spots the dimple-chinned man rise from his seat. He heads around and cuts him off.
What's going on?
Everything's fine, sir. Please, take your seat.
The dimple-chinned man shifts his eyes and tightens his lips, then turns and walks back to his seat. In first class, Michelle turns around and sees the captain and Justin walking to the rear. She gets up.
Ah, sit tight, honey. I'll be right back.
Michelle makes her way down the aisle, passes the lavatories, and pulls open a blue curtain. Justin turns around.
Mrs. Novak.
Yeah.
Everything okay?
She nods.
Can I bring you something? Well, how about Johnny?
No. We're fine. That's all right.
Well, if you need anything, please just press the call button.
Behind him, she sees the captain lead the red-headed woman to the back. In the rear, Kurt pulls aside the blue curtain.
I found her like that. I didn't touch her.
Kurt bends down. Covered in a blanket, the shapely blonde lies on the floor with her hair brushed out and her eyes closed. The agent pulls the blanket away from her body. Her hands are bound together over her chest, holding a Polaroid. Kurt unravels Michelle's colorful silk scarf from around her neck.
Is she traveling alone?
I believe she is.
Kurt lifts the Polaroid, which shows a gloved hand covering the blonde's mouth.
I'm a doctor. Let me have a look.
The red-headed woman bends beside the blonde. As the flight attendant and captain watch, she cradles her fingers under the woman's neck. The doctor pulls out a partially cut-out Polaroid from her sprawling hair.
Well, that answers your question, Captain. There's a serial killer on board, and he wants me to know he's here.
Captain, I don't want any of the passengers knowing there's been a homicide. Let's keep it neat to know as far as the crew is concerned.
You don't think it could be...
What, one of them? Why not? I'm not ruling anything out.
Kurt glances at the corpse.
Now we have to figure out where we're going to put her body.
Luggage hold. We'll have to take her through the cabin.
All right, but let's get a stretcher and an oxygen mask. We'll tell everyone she's ill. No one needs to know she's dead.
Monique?
You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV or VCR.
Oh, Captain, I've got to talk to you. Someone's going to have to carry her through the cabin, and I can't do it. I can't.
Copeland spots the short flight attendant.
Dean.
The captain signals for him to follow. Now, Dean opens the curtain, finding Kurt and the dead body.
Oh. Her.
The agent slowly turns and glares at the flight attendant's emotionless face. Dean meets his stare and looks back at the body.
This is your captain speaking. May I have your attention, please?
One of our passengers has taken ill. Now, there is no reason to be alarmed. We're fortunate to have a physician aboard. At this time, I'd like to ask you to keep the aisles clear until the flight crew has finished transporting her through the cabin. Thank you.
As the woman's body is carried down the aisle, the dimple-chinned man taps the doctor.
What happened to her?
Seizure. She hit her head pretty hard when she fell.
The man leans back and raises his brow. Now an elevator door opens and Kurt lowers the vertical stretcher toward Dean. With the stretcher flat outside of the elevator, both men take an end and maneuver the body through a narrow doorway. In the luggage hold, they carefully lift the woman's body onto a shelf. Dean smooths her hair and pulls the blanket over her face. As he looks up from the body, Kurt eyes him.
Does anyone else have access to this area?
Not without the elevator key.
Good, make sure no one else comes down here, huh?
Kurt and Dean re-enter the elevator. Outside, a fiery sun sets behind the speeding plane. Now, outside a group of condos, Andrea waits at an intercom.
Hello?
Is this the Williamson residence?
Yes, it is.
FBI, we'd like to talk to you for a moment, please.
As the gate opens, she and another agent enter. Back on the plane, Michelle approaches Kurt.
That sick passenger isn't sick, is she?
I'm gonna tell you as much as I know, Michelle. It's no mistake that this maniac and I are on the same plane. He switched the tickets to put us on this flight. He's killed this woman to let me know that he's here. It has clearly become personal.
Why would he do that, Kurt? He's trapped here on the plane with you. There's nowhere for him to go. Unless he doesn't care what happens. Kurt, why wouldn't he care?
Michelle, this is not a rational man. We don't know what he's thinking, okay?
Dean approaches them.
Okay. I've got to talk to you, Mr. Novak.
All right. Go ahead.
Dean eyes Michelle. Kurt rubs his wife's arm.
Just wait with Johnny. I'll be right there, okay?
He watches her head back.
Yes? You know, I keep going over all this in my mind, and... Well, there's this passenger. He was watching the lady who got killed.
What do you mean, watching?
He kept staring at her. It was kind of weird. Really weird, in fact.
All right, show me where he is.
Dean leads the agent from the attendance station to the coach section and pulls back a blue curtain.
Guy in the aisle, six rows back.
Wearing headphones, the dimple-chinned man coldly stares at the men.
Okay. Thanks.
As Kurt walks away, Dean grabs his arm.
Wait a minute. Aren't you going to question him?
Let's find out who he is first.
As Kurt continues to the upper deck, Dean's eyes fix into a pensive stare. In the night sky, bright moonlight illuminates the plane's wing. Our view slowly floats to the windshield of the cockpit. Inside, Captain Copeland talks into his headset.
This is Oceanic 816, confirming we have a code 1114 dead body on board. A passenger, female. I'll transmit you the details. Make sure you have the appropriate equipment on landing.
No, it wasn't illness. It's a homicide, apparently. We have an FBI agent aboard. I'll keep you posted.
You called to the States. It's ringing.
Kurt lifts a headset.
Hello?
Andrea, Novak. He's on the plane.
How do you know that? Are you sure?
He's killed a passenger.
Oh, my God. Okay, listen. I just found out your missing passenger is a woman. The killer somehow altered the manifest. Maybe he killed her too.
Look, let's hope that's not the case. Andrea, I want you to use the manifest I sent you and run the names of every male passenger between the ages of 20 and 50.
There's got to be 100, 120 of them.
But I want you to start with a passenger named, do you have a seating chart?
Yeah.
The engineer hands him a clipboard.
Passenger...
He scrolls down the list and stops on seat number 26D.
Reese. Carl Reese.
Okay. And then check all male flight personnel, in particular, Dean...
The co-pilot looks to the captain.
Franklin. Franklin. Dean Franklin. And Andrea, I don't need to tell you how urgent this is, all right?
Get back to me.
I will.
Andrea closes her phone. Now the engineer turns to Kurt.
Okay, one moment. Mr. Novak, you got another call. I'll put you through.
The agent slowly lifts the headset to his ear.
Novak.
Making any progress, Novak?
Oh, I'm holding my own.
Kurt covers the microphone.
Can you pass this around to something I can walk around with?
See, I think you're losing passengers. I think I'm gaining on you.
Kurt switches to a portable phone.
That's because you're sick, buddy.
I know. It's unbearable. We really gotta have a talk about this.
Yeah, well, you name the place.
Kurt heads down to coach.
I don't think we're ready for a face-to-face just yet.
Yeah, well, I'm ready, pal. I've been ready a long time.
We're going to meet, I promise you, Kurt. But it's going to be my call, not yours.
Don't count on it.
I don't count on anything. Or anyone. You know, I'm still upset with you, Kurt, about those pictures.
Yeah? You mean your family album?
You make it sound so quaint. Like your little family.
Let's leave my family out of this, huh?
He turns a first-class passenger around, then backs away.
Sorry. Like using my wife's scarf to kill that passenger.
But didn't you like that? I thought it was a nice touch.
Kurt passes his wife and son.
Kurt, why are you upset? I mean, I respect you. Why do you think I put you in first class?
What did you use to kill the other woman?
He checks the lavatories.
There's another one?
Terry Williamson.
You're guessing. Don't do that. Let's stick to the facts.
Like why you cut up the photos?
What do you think?
We're thinking it's some symbolic form of mutilation.
In coach, he passes Reese's empty seat.
Haven't you even looked? They all look so, nice. So neat. Perfect.
It's important to be perfect, isn't it, huh? To be in control. To take care of people.
Don't you worry about who I'm taking care of. What about you, huh?
What about me?
Kurt opens another bathroom door.
What is it about me, anyway?
He stops at one that reads, Occupied.
Miss, do you have a key for this door?
See, you're so busy trying to protect all these women, you can't even protect your own pretty little wife.
Oh, I'm taking good care of her, don't worry about that.
Oh, really? Then tell me, what are you doing way back at the tail end of the plane when she's up front with me?
You're bluffing.
Curtains block his view of first class. Meanwhile, gloved hands smear liquid soap on a mirror.
You know what would happen to you if you...
Oh, Kurt, it's so beautiful. That's what she said, isn't it, when you gave her that cheap, crummy scarf? Now, those earrings I gave her were beautiful. And, hey, Kurt, got a lot more presents in mind for her.
Shoving passengers out of his way, the agent frantically darts up the aisle and cuts through the curtain. As he bursts into first class, he slows. His family's seats are empty. As Kurt approaches the row, he finds Michelle and Johnny picking something up off the floor. He lifts the receiver to his ear.
Cute. Very cute.
Talk to you later.
As Kurt heads back to the rear of the plane, Michelle follows. Johnny gets up.
No, Johnny, go back. I'll be right back.
Johnny reluctantly sits in his seat and sighs. As the agent charges down the aisle, he notices that Reese is still missing. He reaches the occupied bathroom and Monique hands him the key.
No.
The agent opens the door. The lavatory is empty. Finding an open panel on the ceiling, Kurt climbs on the toilet and examines it. Michelle enters and slowly approaches a soap-covered mirror. She shakily removes a photograph stuck to the soap and backs away. Kurt peers into the darkened opening and steps down.
Kurt.
It's a picture of Michelle in the bathtub.
Johnny did see him.
He was in the room. Johnny and I were alone, and he was in the room.
Kurt wraps his arms around Michelle and caresses her face. She grips tightly onto his arms. Now in the luggage hold, a latex-gloved hand pulls the blanket away from the dead woman's face, then covers her again. The gloved man heads down a dark, shadowy hallway past netted cargo boxes. Beyond a corner, on a thick pile of netting, a pair of white, high-heeled boots tied at the ankles twitches.
I
Several pieces of luggage lie beneath the head of a blonde woman with a black eye mask and tape over her mouth. The gloved hand creeps up her shoulder, rubs her cheek, and then slides down the length of her gray business suit. With her hands bound at her stomach, the woman trembles. Outside, the plane thrusts across the starry sky. With Andrea.
I want you to pull up his schedule for the past year and I need it immediately.
Hey, I think we got something.
What?
Passenger at the top of Novak's list, Carl Reese. Currently unemployed but worked as an attendant on Southeast Air. Canned him for sexual harassment.
He hands Andrea a printout.
Transmit that to Kurt.
Now in the cockpit, the engineer tears a perforated paper and hands it to Kurt. The agent reads it over.
Captain. Can you have one of your people bring Mr. Reese up here?
Copeland glances at his co-pilot, then lifts a phone and dials.
Justin?
Now with Reese.
And you can't tell me what this is about.
I'm sorry, sir. I really have no idea. Hello. Right this way, please.
Justin leads him to the upper deck where Kurt is waiting.
Thank you.
What do you want?
Have a seat, Mr. Reese.
And who might you be?
Special Agent Novak. I'm with the FBI.
Reese glances at the agent's ID.
Nice photo.
I walked through the cabin earlier, Mr. Reese. You weren't in your seat.
What do we have, bed checks now?
Just answer the question. Where were you?
I don't know. You know. The guy next to me was snoring. I saw an empty seat and figured I'd sit there for a while.
Kurt nods, then looks at the printout.
I see you were a flight attendant. Fired. For sexual harassment.
Hey, this isn't about that lady who got sick, is it?
Why would it be about her?
Oh, lying bitch.
With a hand on his hip, Reese paces the lounge.
What did she tell you?
She's dead, Carl. She was murdered.
A smirk fades from Reese's face.
Yeah. I had nothing to do with her. That's the truth. I tried to talk to her, and she told me to get lost. I got lost.
Kurt lowers his gaze.
Okay. Let's talk about something else. Where were you last Wednesday?
Why?
A woman was murdered in her apartment in Sydney. Where were you?
I wasn't even in Australia last Wednesday.
The agent stares coldly at Reese.
You don't believe me? My ticket. Take a look.
Reese removes a ticket from his back pocket and hands it over. Kurt flips through the ticket packet and glances back at Reese. Now in first class, Justin wheels a dining cart alongside Michelle and Johnny. Small white flower vases and a salad bowl rest on the top shelf.
Mrs. Novak, can I get you something to eat?
You know, I'm not very hungry. Maybe later.
Hey, Johnny, how about you? You hungry?
Yeah.
Good man.
Justin spreads a linen napkin.
You want to clear a space for me? Thank you. Let me see. You look to me like you are a lasagna guy. Am I right?
Yeah.
I thought so. How about another glass of Chardonnay, Mrs. Novak? Maybe relax you, ease the apprehension a little bit.
Why do you say I'm apprehensive?
I know that there's something going on and that your husband is involved in it. Hey, it must be pretty cool to have a dad who's an FBI agent.
Yeah.
Justin sets down a plate of salad.
Now you have to eat all the salad or there's no dessert. That's an FAA regulation. You've got a good kid there. Most kids drive us crazy on these long flights. I'll be right back with your wife.
Thank you.
As Justin heads back with the empty glass, Reese marches down the stairs, pulls back the coach curtain, and storms to his seat. Justin closes the curtain. Now Kurt enters the cockpit.
Did you get your man?
Let me see a crew list.
Now, wait a minute.
Look it, Captain. The killer knows this aircraft.
He knew where to take the model to strangle her without being interrupted. He knew how to get out of the restroom through the overhead. He had access to passenger lists. He knew how to get into the airline computers to put me on the flight. He knew how to use the airline records to find someone he could frame in Australia. Now, I'm betting that Terry Williams had never even got off the plane in Sydney. So you tell me, who the hell else could have pulled this off?
Copeland grits his teeth as the co-pilot lowers his gaze.
Now, if Terry Williamson didn't get off the plane, where could she be?
Well, she's not in any of the cabins. She has to be below decks.
We took her down there before we landed in Sydney. Someone would have noticed she was missing when we did the sea checks on landing.
What about when you were on the ground? I mean, there's always confusion when people are deplaning.
Yeah, but that's when catering uses the elevators. They restock the kitchens.
No, no, wait a minute. He could have taken her down the helihole.
Now, Kurt follows the flight engineer.
Store our computers down there. Excuse me. Flight management system, electronic controls, everything we need to run the aircraft.
As they pass, Michelle looks up. Around the corner, the engineer uses a key to open a small door.
Who else has a key for this?
No one. Hey, I'm not incriminating myself because I'm the only one who's got a key, am I?
I'm not ruling you out as a suspect, if that's what you're asking.
The engineer rolls his eyes, then opens the door. Back in first class, Michelle looks around the cabin. She slides a magazine into the seat pocket and turns to Johnny.
Stay right here, and I mean that. I'll be back in a minute.
She walks briskly toward Justin.
Excuse me, could you watch my son just for a second? I don't want to leave him alone.
Oh, I'd be happy to, Mrs. Novak. No problem.
Thank you.
Michelle hurries to the front of the plane, searching the first class aisles. She heads back past Johnny and into the coach section. Justin walks down the aisle, carefully carrying a bowl filled with chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla ice cream. He approaches Johnny and hands him the cherry top dessert.
I'm breaking the rules tonight. Ice cream before lasagna, but don't tell the captain.
Thanks.
No problem. Your mom asked me to keep an eye on you for a couple of minutes. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm.
They're really keeping your dad busy tonight, aren't they?
Yeah.
Justin looks at his watch.
Give him a moment to look for him.
Well, we got a long way to go, so I think you ought to finish your ice cream and try to take a nap.
I don't want to go to sleep.
Bad dreams?
Your mom told you about that?
I was a kid once. I used to be terrified of the dark.
Yeah. Sometimes I have nightmares.
I bet everybody expects you to be brave, just like your dad. That's kind of hard. I bet your dad is brave, isn't he?
He sure is. Nothing scares him.
Nothing? Well, I bet he gets scared about you.
That's different.
No, it's not. I think everybody's scared of something. It's just a question of what you're scared of.
Is your dad brave?
No. Not really. I gotta do some stuff. I'll check on you in a couple of minutes, okay?
Okay.
As the flight attendant leaves, Johnny scoops a spoonful of ice cream into his mouth and grins. Now, Michelle heads up to the empty lounge. She passes the blue cushioned seats and approaches the cockpit door.
Excuse me, I'm Michelle Novak. Do you know where my husband is?
He went below decks, ma'am. I'm sure there's nothing to worry about. He'll be back in a minute.
Michelle smiles and nods. As she turns away from the captain, she knits her brow. Now, below deck, the bound woman turns her head from side to side. Gloved hands reach up to her face and gently pull back the mask, resting it on her forehead. Smeared mascara stains her eyelids. As a sudden flash illuminates her face, her blue eyes widen. Now, a gloved hand holds an undeveloped photo before the woman. Elsewhere, Kurt and the engineer enter the lower deck. As they head around a corner, Kurt eyes a large control panel. Now, the killer holds the developed picture. The bound woman shivers as she watches the hands unravel a plastic bag. As the bag is lowered toward her face, the woman violently convulses, twisting her body and tied legs. She thrusts her legs up, knocking the gloved figure back. Now, Kurt and the engineer walk along a graded walkway. The agent points forward and they run ahead. As the woman convulses upon the netting, Kurt runs through a doorway. He jets to the side and signals the engineer in another direction.
Nothing this way.
The killer yanks a necklace from the woman's neck and clutches it in his plastic glove. The killer's view turns away from a man's shadow and briskly heads around the netted cargo into a darkened hall. As the engineer heads down a hall, he peers between tall cargo boxes and sees the woman.
She's in here!
Kurt runs up next to him. The two men cautiously squeeze through boxes to reach her. Kurt bends beside the victim and gently removes the tape from her mouth.
Stay with her.
Okay.
The engineer holds the woman in his arms.
We're all right now. It's okay. You can be all right now.
Now, as the grids above cast checkered shadows on Kurt, he briskly heads down a darkened hall and wraps around a corner. As he passes the cardboard boxes draped in netting, his pace quickens. Kurt turns another corner and stops. He looks to his side and cuts through the luggage hold to a closing elevator. He pushes the button, then slams his hand into the sealed door and lowers his head. Now, in the night sky, a row of windows on the Oceanic jet slowly comes closer. Through one, Johnny spoons his ice cream and glances about curiously. Behind him, Michelle rushes down the stairs and peers anxiously toward their seats. She spots Johnny stretching toward the overhead light with his spoon. The doctor hurries past with a blanket, and Monique follows her upstairs with a first aid kit.
Is she here yet? Who? What? I don't know.
As Michelle ascends, Kurt opens the elevator holding the blonde captive. He shuffles her out.
Michelle, help me.
Is she all right?
I think so. Doctor, look at her.
Michelle and Monique recline the woman, and the doctor covers her up. As Copeland enters, Kurt faces Michelle.
Michelle, why aren't you with Johnny?
He's fine. He's having ice cream.
I need you to stay with him.
Kurt's gaze lingers on Michelle as she leaves. Downstairs, she hurries up the aisle with her lips pursed. As she comes to her row, she glances at the seats. The ice cream is melted. Johnny is gone.
Johnny?
Michelle turns a full circle in the aisle as her gaze darts.
Johnny?
She heads up the aisle toward the attendance station, glances back, then breaks into a run.
Johnny?
Now, Andrea approaches a house.
What have we got in this guy?
No record. He lives with his mother. You saw a psycho, didn't you?
Very funny.
He's the last crew member on Kurt's list.
They approach an ornate oval door.
Door's open. Let yourself in.
Andrea opens the door, and they cross a hallway to a family room.
Mrs. Shaw?
I'm in here, if you don't mind.
She sits in a wheelchair.
Mrs. Shaw, I'm Special Agent Ed.
That battle where the man said the thing about the whites of their eyes?
Bunker Hill, I think.
Bunker
Hill. Mrs. Shaw turns up the TV.
Castor's last stand.
I'm sorry, but the correct answer was Bunker Hill.
She turns off the TV.
That was very good. Not many young people know these things. What was it you wanted?
We'd like to ask you some questions about your son, Justin.
Her smile fades.
Was he in an accident? The plane?
No, it's nothing like that.
I worry about him sometimes. All that flying. He's such a good boy.
I'm sure he's a good boy, Mrs. Shaw. That's why we want to talk to you.
Back on the plane, Kurt watches the doctor treat the woman.
She's seen the killer, Doc, or I'll need to question her.
We can try, but we won't get any answers. She's in shock.
You can't give her something?
I'm going to, but it'll put her to sleep.
Michelle runs up the stairs.
Johnny's gone.
Kurt follows. On the couch, Monique strokes the woman's blonde hair and holds her trembling hand. Downstairs, Michelle points to the empty seat.
I told him not to leave his seat.
Michelle, you shouldn't have left him alone.
He wasn't alone. I asked that steward, Justin, to keep an eye on.
Everything okay, folks?
Where is my son?
He's fine, sir. Mrs. Novak, I've been keeping an eye on him, and Johnny told me that he was bored and he didn't feel like taking a nap. Dean had those electronic games, so they went back there to pick one out. I hope that...
Kurt and Michelle abruptly go to the flight attendant station. Dean pours coffee.
Dean, where's my son?
Your son? I'm sorry, I don't know who your son is.
Look, Justin said that you brought my son down here to give him one of your electronic games. Now, where is he?
I don't handle the first class passengers, sir. I don't know why he'd say that.
Kurt grabs Dean's arm.
You coming with me? Let's go.
He pushes Dean toward the stairway. As Monique and the doctor slowly help the groggy patient downstairs, Kurt and Dean wait for them to pass. Kurt faces Michelle.
Sweetheart, I need you to wait here.
I'll keep looking.
Back at the Shaw house.
Does he have a girlfriend? Is there someone...
Someone else? No, of course not. He takes care of me. That is what a son does. A good son. It is the least he can do after...
After what?
It was an accident, just an accident.
He put you in this wheelchair, didn't he?
Mrs. Shaw furrows her brow.
You don't really think he deliberately pushed me down those stairs, do you?
The agents trade a glance.
You're saying it was an accident?
I was seeing a man. Justin was 10. We had an argument. Now I'm in a wheelchair. He has always blamed me for his father leaving.
Andrea nods and glances around the room.
I'd like to take a look at your son's room.
In the lounge, Kurt shoves Dean.
On this plane. And if I have to comb every inch of it, I'm going to find him. But it's not going to take that long, is it, Dean? Because you're going to tell me where he is right now.
This is crazy. It's a plane, sir. How could he possibly be missing?
Now, Mrs. Shaw wheels down her hallway.
You're not making a mess in there, I hope.
Maybe we're barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah, well, just keep barking.
As Andrea finds neatly folded socks in a drawer, Mrs. Shaw looks in.
I want you to leave everything exactly as you found it.
Andrea smiles at the woman, shoves a fistful of socks into the sock drawer, and closes it. Now, on the plane's lower deck, Michelle paces and wrings her hands. Michelle steps toward first class. She dashes to her seat and answers the attached phone.
Yes.
Hi, Michelle.
Where's my son?
Funny. That's exactly what I wanted to talk to you about. If you go into the galley, there's an elevator there. Get on it and come downstairs. We'll have a little family reunion. You love Johnny, don't you?
Of course I do.
Then you won't bring your husband. That would be very bad for Johnny's health. See ya.
The phone slides from her hand. She runs through the attendance station, yanks aside the curtain to the galley, and spots the elevator. She dashes inside and turns the key. Meanwhile, in the lounge.
We're not gonna play this game anymore, Dean. Now stop lying.
Lying? Why would I lie to you, sir?
You were awful quick to blame the murder of that passenger on Carl Reese.
Now, wait a minute. I was just trying to help you there.
I want to know where my son is.
What's going on here?
Stay out of this, Captain. Dean knows where my son is, and he's gonna tell me right now.
Copeland steps between them.
Captain, I swear. You think Dean killed all these women, and now is taking your son?
What women? What are you talking about?
I can vouch for Dean. I've done over 100 flights with him.
What about Justin?
Copeland puts his hands on his hips.
I can't tell you a thing about him.
Why not?
He keeps to himself. No one knows anything about his personal life.
Brushing past them, Kurt points to Dean.
He stays here. You don't have him out of your sight, all right?
He stays here!
As Kurt rushes downstairs, Dean adjusts his necktie. Kurt enters first class.
Miss, do you know where Justin is?
He's not up here.
What about my wife?
No, I'm sorry.
He rushes out past drowsy passengers. Daytime. In Justin's bedroom, the quiet agent empties a linen closet and peers at the bare shelves. Wearing latex gloves, Andrea looks under the mattress, then scans the room. Focusing on a door, she tries its knob, spots a latch, then faces her partner.
Billy, check this out.
Andrea reaches up and unlatches the door. The agents enter onto a dark landing. Steps descend to a basement storage room, and musty sunlight seeps through a ground-level window high on the cinder block wall. Chairs, bicycles, fans, and rolled rugs clutter the area. A life-size silhouette of a woman looms in the dark. As Andrea steps toward the dangling cardboard construction, she bumps into a clothesline strung to the ceiling. The flimsy silhouette bobs. She yanks the cord loose, and the thing falls. She pulls the string to a ceiling lamp. A handmade cross frame forming the flat cutout of a woman lies before them. Billy turns it over. Photos of arms, legs, and a midriff are pasted to appropriate sections. A foldout on the thing's head bears two photos, each a half picture of the face of a screaming woman. Opening the foldout, a picture of Mrs. Shaw's face rests underneath.
There's only two pieces missing. That's all he needs to complete the set.
What happens then?
It's called compulsive pattern completion. When he gets the last piece, it's over.
What do you mean, over?
Now, on the plane, Justin adjusts knobs and switches on a control board. He opens a panel and punches in a code. Nearby, Johnny stirs on the floor.
Where am I?
Had a nice nap, did we?
I want my mom.
Who doesn't?
Michelle enters the dark room.
Give me my son!
Mom!
Justin headlocks Johnny.
It's okay, baby. Mommy's here.
Hello, Mrs. Novak. Came along. Smart girl.
You have me now. You don't need him. Let him go.
No, no. I do need him. And I need your daddy, too.
Why?
Well, what's a family without a daddy, huh?
I'm not afraid of you.
Tough guy all of a sudden, huh?
Please, please don't hurt my son.
My dad's gonna get you.
Well, you better hurry up.
Justin pushes a button on the control board and the airplane lurches. On the upper deck, a service station spills beverage cans and a coffee pot and a cart tip over. Kurt struggles off the floor, then races toward the stairs. Outside, the massive jet plunges into a nosedive. An airline attendant drops his tray and people are thrown from their seats. In the cockpit, the pilot scrambles to his chair and straps himself in.
Try again. Still nothing.
Can't you override it?
No dice. Give me a hand with the phone.
Lowers the field overpower this thing.
Try old hold again.
Nothing.
Give me bird speed.
Still nothing.
Below decks, Justin squeezes his arm around Johnny's neck.
I tell me you're still not scared, huh?
Michelle staggers against a wall.
Huh? Are you scared?
I told you everybody is scared of something. Well, now we're just waiting for
Daddy. Hold on, baby!
Johnny grimaces as they shake.
Hold on!
Between a full moon and white clouds, the plane banks wildly. Cockpit.
Mayday, mayday! This is Oceanic Flight 816. Emergency descent out of 35,000 on a heading of 090.
At the Shaw's, Andrea paces with her cell phone.
What do you mean you can't reach them? How can their radio be... Well, keep trying.
Back on the plane, Kurt staggers up the trembling aisle. He squeezes past Dean as he climbs the stairway. Passengers struggle to stay in their seats. The thrashing bangs Kurt against the walls as he enters the cockpit.
What the hell is going on?
Computer's gone crazy. I got no control. The whole system's gone down.
Justin! He's underneath! No radio! We've lost all communications!
I'm going down! Hold on! He's got my wife and child!
I'm going with you! If I can get to the FMS, I can reprogram it. Voltec, it's the only communication we've got!
The engineer gives Kurt a hand radio and they shuffle toward the stairs. They descend and force their way down the aisles. A jolt slams Kurt against a wall and the engineer grabs and holds open a swinging door.
It's open! He must have gone down this way!
He's expecting it!
Kurt pulls himself through the hatch and down a metal ladder. As he puts a foot on the floor, Kurt falls from the ladder, catches hold, and pulls himself back up.
Slide down!
The engineer descends the rungs with quick steps, then slides to the floor.
Start with the computer. We know he's been there!
They stumble through a narrow doorway into the computer room. The engineer kneels at the control board.
Oh, man, this guy knows his stuff. Bypassing the autopilot is no easy thing. Maybe I can patch something to help. He's got the control unit.
It's leveling out.
Yeah, I can tell you, he's doing it, not us.
Look, you stay with it. I'm gonna try to find him.
Okay.
The radio in hand, Kurt heads off.
Making any progress, Novak?
I've been waiting to hear from you, Justin. Where's my wife and son?
You sure took long enough figuring this all out, Novak.
Kurt enters a dark cargo hold.
I just wanted to say goodbye.
You taking this aircraft down, Justin?
How did you guess?
Then you don't need them!
You don't either, Novak. Besides, they're having fun with me.
Dad, help! Help!
Justin! Justin, keep talking!
What are you getting so excited about, Novak? Your kid was talking out of turn. I had to stop that. Now,
Kurt passes the blanketed corpse.
You keep talking, Justin, so I can find you and we settle this thing.
Well, it's going to be settled, Novak. I'm just having a little fun, that's all.
As the plane jerks, Kurt turns a lit corner.
So what's your story, Justin? You were abused?
Oh, please. What the big FBI man took some psychology classes.
I'm just trying to figure you out, pal. Who was it, your father?
I'm not playing this game, Novak.
Who was it, your mother?
Mr. Novak, please stay back or I'll snap his neck, I promise you.
Kurt spots Justin through a gap, then heaves against the bound cargo boxes, widening it. He lifts the radio as he strains.
Must have been some piece of work, your mother.
Shut up!
Can't kill her, so you're killing all these other women, huh?
I take care of my mother.
Kurt slips into the narrow gap between the boxes and wall.
Over here! You lay her out nice!
Just shut up! Shut up! You know, you don't get it at all, Novak, do you? Well, you've had it way too easy, Kurt.
He squeezes toward them.
Kurt, are you listening to me? Kurt, do you hear?
Noticing Michelle's gaze, Justin spins around.
Dad!
The two men face each other.
Hello, Justin.
Justin grabs a hatch on the floor.
No!
Don't do it!
As he pulls the cover off, Kurt clings to the netting on the boxes.
Hey! Maybe Johnny would like to try his luck in the water before the plane goes down!
Hey! Don't do it, Justin!
You take another step and he is gone!
Justin edges Johnny over the hatch.
Don't do it! It's never gonna be over until we work this out!
Come on, meet for them! That's what you want!
With his free hand, Justin holds up the control unit.
If I press the button, the plane goes down right now! Huh?
What's the matter, Justin? You don't like it face to face? Not your style, is it?
You get scared now, aren't you, Justin? You like sneaking up on women, don't you? That's something you can handle.
Shut up! Shut up!
This is between you and me!
Justin glances from Kurt to Michelle.
Justin! Let my son go!
Justin grimaces, then presses a button on the control unit. The plane lurches, tossing all of them to the floor. In the computer room, the engineer flops by the control board, and in second class, the jostled passengers cling to the seats. In the cargo bay, Johnny slithers free of Justin's hold. Kurt watches a metal cabinet slide toward him. It knocks him to the floor, and he falls unconscious. Now in the cockpit.
What's happening with the computers?
Still there, I got no readings.
In the computer room, the engineer frantically pushes buttons.
I'll get the nose up. Give me one thrust.
Give me 100% and one.
Copeland strains with the stick.
Give me a readout.
600 feet in descending.
The co-pilot stares at the display dials.
580.
Ahead, sunlight shimmers on the waves.
This wave will hit the water.
In the cargo bay, Johnny falls against the wall as he scrambles away. Justin grabs him. As Justin holds the boy over the open hatch, Kurt opens his eyes. Michelle lunges at Justin and he drops the control unit.
Johnny, get it! Get it!
Johnny scampers free.
That way, Johnny! One of the pilots is there! Give it to him!
As Justin reaches for the unit, Johnny snatches it and runs. Justin grabs it and misses and gives chase. As Justin leaps over the open hatch, Kurt trips him, then jumps to his feet. Michelle looks up from the floor as they fight. Meanwhile, Johnny runs between towers of netted boxes. Objects fall around him and he trips in the tangled netting. He continues on, keeping a firm hold on the control unit. The plane swerves side to side as it soars above the glistening ocean toward a dawning sun. In the cargo bay, Kurt and Justin wrestle on the floor. Michelle keeps an eye on them as she scrambles to her feet. Johnny races to the lit corner and bumps into the wall. Steadying himself, the boy runs ahead down the corridor. The corpse's arm flops out limply in front of him. As the woman's lifeless head jostles back and forth, Johnny steps around the arm. He continues running as he clears her outstretched hand. Outside, fumes trail from the engines as sunlight shines on the wing. In the cargo bay, Justin forces Kurt's head toward the open hatch. As he pushes him closer, light reflects off the water onto Kurt's face. Michelle takes a fire extinguisher from the wall and pulls its safety pin. She sprays the foam on Justin, and Kurt rolls around and slugs him. Jumping to his feet, Kurt holds up a fist. Justin lies unconscious on the floor. Now in the computer room, Johnny turns a corner into the control room. The jerking motion slings him against a wall and he spots the flight engineer. As the engineer reaches out, Johnny clings to the wall and holds out the control unit with the other hand. The engineer takes it and plugs it in. Glancing from it to the control board, he punches in a numbered sequence. Meanwhile, in the cargo bay, Michelle makes her way to Kurt. Sitting beside Justin's unconscious body, they look down at the passing water, and Kurt takes her in his arms. In the computer room, the engineer finishes the four-digit sequence.
I got it!
He grins at Johnny. In the cockpit, a control panel lights up.
Computer's back online!
The nose of the plane lifts.
Give me first speed 500. 500 set. Give me max continuous. MCT set. Yes. She's back.
Copeland's chest heaves as he steadies the plane, then he and the co-pilot high-five. The plane climbs to higher altitude. In the cargo bay, Kurt ties Justin's hands as Johnny and the engineer approach. Johnny hugs his mother.
Buddy.
Hey.
Kurt joins them and wraps his arms around them both. The engineer kneels beside Justin carefully. Kurt and his family gaze blankly at the open hatch. The engineer covers it with its heavy lid. Now, on a runway, paramedics wheel the blonde patient to an ambulance and firemen rush under the landed plane. Beneath the wings, the engineer, Copeland, and the co-pilot gaze up at the craft. Monica approaches with her arms folded, helped along by another attendant. Dean hurries by with a shoulder bag and his head lowered. Andrea approaches the boarding ramp and peers up at the handcuffed man deplaning with Kurt.
Mr. Shaw, there's a car waiting for you.
Justin grins.
Nice work, Kurt.
It was a family effort, really.
When I said I wanted to be in the loop, this isn't what I had in mind.
Let's get him out of here, man. Be back in a minute.
He had a whole little photo display going on in his cellar. He only needed a couple shots to complete the set.
Got him, too.
Justin smiles at Billy as agents open a car door.
Your mother thinks the world of you.
Justin gazes at Kurt with a weak smile. Billy holds the prisoner's head as he gets in.
You wouldn't mind doing the paperwork on this one, would you? There's some people I need to spend time with.
I was gonna suggest that. There's a car for you.
She gives him a keychain.
All right, family, let's get out of here, huh?
Dad, you know, I was wondering.
What were you wondering?
Well, that wasn't really a vacation. So, we go somewhere else.
All right, let's go somewhere more adventurous this time.
Yeah.
Like camping in the backyard.
Kurt hoists Johnny over his shoulder.
Let's go home.
He opens the door of a black sedan. As Michelle puts down her bag and heads around to the passenger door, Kurt puts it in the back seat with Johnny. On the runway, dark-suited agents climb up the plane's boarding ramp. The sedan pulls away, crossing under the plane's wing and passing the flashing lights of an emergency vehicle. Fade to black.